Welcome to AM Best Audio.
As hurricanes, wildfires, and floods grow more frequent and severe, insurers face mounting pressure to balance coverage, risk management, and profitability, with some private carriers retreating from high-risk areas or sharply raising premiums. Federal disaster insurance programs are taking on a more critical role. Expanding these programs to include wind and fire protection is increasingly viewed as a step that could help stabilize the market, strengthen clients' financial security and resilience, and create new opportunities for insurers to better serve communities and adapt to evolving risks. I'm Lori Chortis for AM Best Audio, and joining us now to discuss that is William Koppelman. He's president and CEO of Standard Premium Finance Management Corporation. Bill, welcome. It's so great to speak with you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Lori. I'm really pleased to have the opportunity to speak with you today. I'm excited to talk about this. I wrote that white paper and I didn't realize we'd get such a response from it. So I'm excited, and I've had to kind of, full disclosure, I've had to educate myself a little bit over some of the programs I've occurred in the last few years. But just a word about Standard. I am president of Standard Premium Finance Management, and Standard Premium Finance Management is a wholly owned subsidiary of Standard Premium Finance Holdings, which trades under the symbol SPFX on the OTC Premier Markets. So, I wanted to just get that little plug in there if I could.
Absolutely. No, that's wonderful. Thank you for sharing that with us. Bill, with catastrophic weather events on the rise, how are insurers adapting their risk exposure and underwriting strategies to address the growing financial impact of natural disasters?
Well, Lori, I think sadly over the short term, insurers have taken more of a reactive approach than a proactive approach. This has really, largely happened over the last 20 years or so. And these reactive approaches, they're not, they're solutions, but that they're not long-term solutions. And they include such things as obviously pricing incentives for policyholders in the form of risk retention deductibles, and then mitigation credits such as Citizens. And, excuse me, because I'm going to refer to Florida a lot because, we're based in Florida and we're in 38 states and branching, but we've kind of built our roots in Florida. But, they basically created mitigation credits to reward, improve infrastructure and lower the overall exposure to inherent risks, building codes, which is a good thing, but unfortunately, a lot of these things are kind of dynamic and selective, aligning price with risk. So, the point in the article I was writing is, long-term, I think there has to be a collaborative effort to extend beyond the insurance industry itself. And that's coordination between insurers, builders, communities, regulators, governments, and the like, to implement long-term solutions, to have a meaningful impact, for affecting loss outcomes.
Bill, as some private insurers pull back from high-risk regions or raise premiums, how does this affect coverage availability and market stability? And how are carriers responding, and what steps is Standard Premium taking to ensure clients still have access to necessary coverage and maintain financial stability?
Well, it's a great question for us in particular. Based on the Southeast, obviously I've seen a dramatic change in the areas where we have a heavy concentration, properties along the coast, and we've been, very vulnerable to these rate changes, and properties have been literally unaffordable to insure. Florida and Louisiana, many states now have state assigned funds, at a state level, to kind of mitigate, to be the insurer of last resort, if you will. But, what I've seen in the last 10, 20 years is interesting from a finance company's standpoint. What was the premium 10 years ago has literally just become the down payment on a finance policy, two or three years later. I mean, we had an example of a shopping center that their large shopping center with $180,000 premium that in 1 year it went up, 800%. I mean, the premium went from $180,000 to $800,000. So the premium or the reserve for that premium for that year essentially became the down payment for that policy in the subsequent years. So it's created an opportunity for us to create billing plans. But there's downsides to the billing plans on these state funded entities. Obviously with the catastrophic insurance, they've come with fully earned provisions. So that discourages finance companies from financing these premiums, because oftentimes they have minimum premiums. Obviously, they're there for a reason. You want to have a 80% windstorm, or through a windstorm, that policy is going to earn 80% of the premium. So finance companies are a little gun shy to finance that. But I'm proud to say Standard has always been proactive. We've done studies and found that although there is a high risk in financing that type of policy because of the fully owned provision, these markets tend to be very stable. Condo associations and the commercial buildings and whatnot, there's a very low instance of cancellation. So in the finance business, we emphasize the unearned premium as the collateral, but this, these fully earned provisions create, a problem, quite frankly, in financing it. And there's a hole in the collateral. But our experience over time has been that we've mitigated that fully earned provision with a low cancellation rate. We do a very good job in terms of maintaining coverage and doing things that promote business retention. There's one thing I wanted to point out too, because in getting involved with Citizens, I was involved in the Premium Finance Association for many years down in Florida. Many of these state administered plans have billing programs, and while they're well intended, they lead to retention, right? So it's kind of counterintuitive. You essentially, the government wants to depopulate these. These are taking away high risk or uninsurable risks from the common market, but these payment plans lead to retention. A lot of us have policies that we never even see our agents, right? I have a small boat that I haven't seen my agent in 15 years. It just renews automatically and so on. So it discourages an agent insured relationship. And I think by putting it into the open market, not to promote premium finance, but essentially what I'm doing is if you take away these direct bill payment plans and put it into, an agency bill, you're promoting an agent insured interaction, which gives the agent the ability really to do his job and to analyze the insured, maybe find different markets to take them away from assigned risk plans, or to give them better coverage or renew or even cross sell and things like that. So I strongly believe in taking away these direct bill plans from these state funded entities. It's kind of counterintuitive to depopulation of these, these insurers of the last resort.
Well, federal disaster insurance programs currently provide limited coverage. Bill, how could expanding these programs to include wind and fire protection better support homeowners, businesses, and communities?
Well, that's the question, and this is the crux of my white paper that I wrote. I mean, look, the fundamental principles of insurance are to allow the risk to be spread among the many, among the few to the many, right? So, you want to make pricing more predictable, stable, and affordable. So, you really need to spread the risk, and the two main tenets of that are, it's the law of large numbers, and it's risk pooling. Individual companies, even the biggest companies, just do not have the numbers to take on these huge pools of risk to mitigate the casualty losses of, these catastrophic events. So you need a collaboration between private and public entities that can maybe just temporarily shift market or just to make it affordable. So, expanding these federal programs will do that. The saying goes, it might not always play well in Peoria, right? But, as a nation, I think we have a duty we've always done to protect our fellow citizens. I'm not expecting somebody in Illinois to pay, $5,000 for the homeowner's insurance. But when you have a federally mandated program, you need to pool the risk and make the stabilize the rates among the many. The argument against that, and there is a federally chartered program now, as everyone knows. I mean, the National Flood Insurance Program has been designed to do just that. I think it was since, I don't know, it's 40, 50 years ago, 1968, it was implemented. The problem is that it has not been administered correctly. So you've got a plan where the federal government is taking away these high risk or uninsurable risks, and but the policyholders are not educated in terms of what flood actually covers, and there is a lack of enforcement on behalf of the government or the flood plan itself to have more participants as a result to spread that risk, right? So I was reading somewhere that 77% of flood claims are occurring outside of mandatory flood zones. So these people don't even buy flood insurance. So they're not paying into the pool. And then the federal government in the form of FEMA is picking up the bill and we're paying it anyway. So before we get into these federal programs, I think we need to reform the National Flood Insurance Program as a model to get that working correctly and educate the consumer to get them to understand that they're at high risk. And again, it's all about spreading that risk, pooling that risk among the many. That's going to take an effort, I understand. But I think before we get too far along on the federal aid programs for wind and fire, we need to really educate and fix the flood program. A lot of people, hurricane, I don't know, it was 5 or 6 years ago that hit the panhandle, and a lot of the damage occurred after the windstorm event, and it was as a result of rising flood water. So many of these homeowners did not have flood, and even I think in Fort Myers a couple of years ago, it was the same thing. It wasn't a windstorm claim. It was a flood claim as a result of rising waters and flood waters. So, and many of these people were underinsured or non-insured. So FEMA had to come in and step in. So again, it's the taxpayers paying the bill anyway. So there has to be better education and enforcement on what's now a federally funded program before we go into these models, windstorm and fire. But I think that's not a difficult fix.
Customize your data experience. BestLink now offers an interactive company dashboard that provides company-level intelligence in a fast, user-friendly interface featuring interactive tables, charts, and Sparkline performance histories. Customize the dashboard tiles to prioritize the insurer ratings, data, and analytics that best support your workflow. AM Best. Our insight, your advantage.
Earlier, you talked about the importance and value of collaboration. What opportunities exist for insurers to collaborate with policymakers, local governments, and communities to invest in resilient infrastructure and mitigation strategies that reduce disaster-related losses?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that there has to be more communication with the private industry and state and federal lawmakers and legislators. It's funny because I was reading, it was actually an AM Best. I was reading an AM Best article. It was in this month's issue that there was a Senate bill to reform the National Flood Insurance Program to eliminate a non-competition clause prohibiting private companies to participate that are participating in the plan or the what they call the Write Your Own WIO program from competing or offering competitive pricing. So that's very ironic to me. It just seems counterintuitive to that. So I'm glad to see that, but it just kind of underscores the lack of communication and cooperation between private and federal entities. So, notwithstanding that, there has to be the two main tenets are mitigating the loss and spreading, pooling the risk, right? So there has to be more of a science-based approach to building standards. And again, full disclosure, prior to writing this article, I didn't even know there's an entity called the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety. This has been around for about 20, 30 years. It's a nonprofit organization, but they take a scientific approach to reduce catastrophic losses, and they get down into the science, in terms of building materials and practices, and they do actual field testing and laboratory testing even, and they use science to create solutions such as sealed roof decks, which is kind of like a unibody construction, and that's actually been implemented in Florida as part of the building code, to kind of fully seal a roof. They've also developed what they call a wildfire prepared home, and it's basically a set of mitigation approaches that involve things like fire retardant roof tiles and fire retardant connected structures, fences, decks, and flame resistant vents and housing and things like that. So these are science based standards. I think that we can't just kind of keep increasing the rate based on the risk. We've got to lower the risk, through science. And I this is a tremendous resource. I don't know how much private and federal entities are taking advantage of it, but somebody's doing a good job and doing a lot of good work to reduce, the insurable risk, if you will.
Technology and predictive modeling are increasingly important in risk assessment. Bill, how are insurers leveraging these tools to anticipate climate-related risks and improve claims management?
Well, AI is the big thing right now, right? So, they're using AI. We've used it here. It's tremendous. I'm amazed. I talk to my computer, it talks back to me. It blows my mind, right? So, but we have so much data. Right. So, with AI, it's able to analyze the data from all different sources, not just and information needs to be shared. Right. I mean, it needs to be pooled together. But there's other things such as satellite and drone imagery, climate data, creating, detailed global hazard maps. There's geographic information that I think can pinpoint properties at a granular level to identify, specific areas of flooding, wildfires, hurricanes, and things like that. And then, the CAT modeling, in conjunction with the AI to simulate potential disaster scenarios and using the real-time data. And of course, climate projections can put all this stuff in. This is whether you believe in climate change or not, this is not a, this is a generational problem, right? I mean, this is, our problem for 100 or 200 years for our children or our grandchildren. So, right. Whether it's going to change 200 years from now, it's cyclical. It's here now, and it's going to be here for, the next 100, 200 years, or it's going to just keep getting worse. Regardless, we got to do something to fix it. So I think AI has been instrumental in playing a part in that. And again, it's, the more data that's in there, both from a, from a risk standpoint and from a risk prevention standpoint in the form of, creating, better construction and materials. So that's my hope is that what I've seen AI do for us, I mean, it could just do wonders for the insurance industry for years to come.
Bill, I'm going to ask you to take out your crystal ball for a moment, if I may. Looking ahead, how might the growing frequency and severity of natural disasters reshape insurance products, coverage options, and market approaches over the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, unfortunately, if proactive modeling and CAT modeling scenarios aren't implemented, prices will just continue to rise. Without collaboration from federal government, FEMA, and private companies to develop a national program, insurance companies will continue to fail, and then the others will just basically choose the risks they want to insure, you know, everybody wants to make a profit. I mean, you know, we want to make a profit, right? And, you know, I wouldn't want the federal government to force us into financing something that, you know, that's entirely, you know, a nonprofit endeavor. But, you know, this has to be, you know, collaborative effort. And, you know, again, it's insurers, builders, communities, regulators, state and federal governments. You know, again, I think it has to be done. I'm not, you know, I have to be careful because I'm not a proponent in a big government getting involved in private industry. But this is a national, if not a global problem, and it's not going to go away. And without pooling these resources, premiums are just going to continue to rise, and it just get to the point where, you know, people will choose to be uninsured or self-insured, which is uninsured. So in the end, I mean, there's two main principles. You need to pool the risk. And I think, you know, it has to be done through federally chartered programs with cooperation of private industry. And then you have to use science to mitigate the loss, you know, with better building codes and infrastructure. And again, ultimately that's going to stabilize the rates. You really want to stabilize the rates. I don't know if they'll go down, but you know, we have to have stability because in the future, you know, everyone wants to experience the American dream and have peace of mind that they're well covered for potential loss without this tremendous financial burden of insurance that currently exists. So, you know, I just see it as a collaborative risk, you know, and probably the timeline is 5 to 10 years. I think that's reasonable, but something has to be done.
Well, Bill, this has been such a fantastic and informative conversation, and it's truly been a pleasure to speak with you today. I greatly appreciate it. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Okay. Thanks, Lori.
That was William Koppelman, President and CEO of Standard Premium Finance Management Corporation. And for AM Best Audio, I'm Lori Chortis.
Looking to get the full attention of the insurance industry? We have the platforms that will do just that. Whether it be AM Best TV, AM Best Audio, Best Review Magazine, or Best Day. Find out more by calling AM Best Advertising Sales at 908-439-2200, extension 5399, and have a great day.